Thank you.
We are recording. Hear ye, this Honorable Appellate Court for the Second Judicial District is now in session. The Honorable Robert D. McLaren presiding. Your Honors, the third case on the docket this morning is 2-19-0495, N. Ray, the Marriage of Colleen Keegan, Petitioner Appellant, and John C. Papin, Respondent Appellee. Arguing for the appellant, Mr. Edward R. McCullough. Arguing for the appellee, Mr. Randy K. Johnson.
And let the record reflect that the marshal has made several attempts at contacting appellant's counsel to find out if or why he hasn't appeared or has not joined the meeting.
He just came in.
Okay. Put him on the screen, please.
No, that's Councilor McCullough. Can you please turn on your camera? Oh, so he's listed at 12607.
No, there he is.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. McCullough, this case was scheduled for 10:30. Is there some excuse or rationale?
11:30. Yes.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Did you say you thought it was at 11:30?
Yes, I did. That's what the
It was at 11:30. You didn't connect until 11:57. Oh,
I couldn't follow the instructions.
Uh-huh. Okay, shall we just proceed then?
Yes, that's fine.
But we do have another case pending after this, and so we need to make sure we keep to general time. Right.
Okay.
May I just
we are recording, are we not?
Yes, sir, we are.
Okay. Mr. McCullough, you may proceed.
Yes.
You have 15 minutes, sir.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Edwin McCullough, and I represent Dr. Colleen Keegan. She is not present today for this hearing. And the issue that I want to discuss first is the her medical condition. And it goes to the question of whether or not she could work as a dermatologist. She's a licensed physician in no life, and Mr. Papin is a personal injury lawyer, and the court motion has to do with the deposition, her deposition, which she never gave. Mr. Papin originally scheduled the deposition for November 18th, 2015. She was unable to attend this deposition because she was visiting her brother, who was very ill and in the hospital. The court then ordered that she attend the deposition on December 21st, 2015. The week before the 21st, she had severe abdominal pains and underwent an MRI on December 16th. She called her attorney saying she could not attend the deposition on December 21st. That was related to the attorneys for Mr. Papin. That weekend, she took a daughter's for a holiday outing in Chicago. The parties never rescheduled their deposition. And Judge Douglas on the motion of Mr. Payton to bar her testimony, which he filed in the end of 2016, the court entered an order barring her from testifying and struck her previous evidence on medical condition had to do with her allegation of disability, and she was not able to do so when the court ruled that he found no disability in the latter ruling of January 21st, 2019, excuse me. In some ruling, the judge said that he had just thrown a large monkey wrench into the case. Indeed, it did. I respectfully request that this court hold that barring the order was too harsh and to reverse and remand the case to the circuit court. We stated three decisions holding that when there is no willful non-compliance with the order, that the imposition of the sanction of dismissal was error. In this hearing on January 3rd, Judge Douglas found that the refusal or failure to attend the deposition was not willful. And we cited the case, the General Motors case, with the point that the corrections were not a willful violation of the trial court's authority, and the drastic step of dismissal was error. You're barring the medical evidence to stand up to dismissal. Courts that there's a drastic sanction should be dismissed. Dismissal should be employed only in the, after other enforcement process had been failed.
Counsel, Mr. McCullough, you mentioned that the discovery violations were not willful, and the trial court made a finding as to that, at least as to one aspect of the proceedings. But how is it that if there is virtually no discovery, how is the other side supposed to prepare an adequate defense to the claim that she has mental dysfunction, and the mental dysfunction, until there's discovery, one cannot determine the nature or the extent or the disability that is involved such that it would affect her ability to sustain herself and therefore have any direct or indirect effect on maintenance?
Just as to.
Well, the maintenance was based on the respective incomes of the parties. I don't believe the letter opinion of January 6, 2019 discusses that. But we contend that the court erred in the denial of maintenance. Dr. Keegan, the answer is I don't think that the parties was well informed that her dysfunction was not mental, it was physical. She had abdominal problems. She had her gallbladder removed. She had a laparoscopy performed. And she wasn't, none of the evidence went into the decision that Doug made to deny maintenance. There's a question first of the framing of the issues in this case. The defendant, Peter, repeatedly says that we did not provide a record of the report of proceedings on various motions. The motions were not hearings where evidence was taken and the court decided that it was as a matter of law. We cited three cases that hold that the record of the proceedings is not required because the court has enough. I cited the Gallo v. Yankee on page 24 of my brief. And I set out the reasons on the decision, page 24 and 25 of our brief. It does not discuss this case at all. It doesn't address it. I also cited Louvers, which is no direct conversion company, and I submit that his not addressing these decisions is a concession that the firing war went too far. Therefore, the discourse of original judgment for the name of the case to instruct the court. I also argue that in the General Rules case, the court held that it's a drastic remedy of dismissal was error. We have the same situation here. We have a dismissal based on just one order. And I asked the court to reverse that dismissal. Mr. Pinkman incorrectly cited the Midwest sign and saying that the record on appeal was insufficient. He went down the opinion, apparently went down and got to page 319 and she ignored that with the question in this case was an interpretation of a contract matter of law. And failure to present that hearing was not necessary for determination on the appeal. He also claims that Dr. Keegan filed no response to John's motion to bar the record otherwise. I'm citing him on page 14 of his brief. She filed the response on December 29, 2016. That's a presented report that it seems to be regarded. So I also argue that Judge Sardos prohibited Dr. Keegan from discussing her testimony with her lawyer seven different times through the proceedings. I set out in detail. My position on that is that the prohibition of a party not being able to discuss the testimony in the future or past with her lawyer is a denial of effective assistance of counsel. I also point out that there is no showing that Mr. Papin argues that there there was no showing of prejudice. The fact that she wasn't able to present her, she would have to prove, how would she prove prejudice? What, she'd have to rely on hypothetical facts and we're going to the attorney's side communications that can't be done. She, people versus Gull, I was cited by both parties, and submit that the logic of how it applies here. Both parties cited the Potsdam-Schmidt versus Port City case and the Supreme Court in that case stated that a civil litigant has a right to retain counsel based on due process of law. The defendant doesn't quarrel with that position. Lastly, the maintenance issue was decided wrongly because the court used the last year of Mr. Caton's earnings and compared it with her salary of $93,000 a year. So you add up all the earnings you presented in over a period of 5 years from 2014 to 2018, they totaled over $2.5 million. The determination that the court made was not didn't take into account these earnings or its potential as a person who's a lawyer to earn more money and see nearly more. I have no further points to start with.
I have no questions.
None. Thank you.
I have no questions. Thank you. Sir, you'll be given an opportunity to make rebuttal after Mr. Johnson has given his presentation.
Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson, you may proceed.
Your Honors, respectfully, I will stand on the issues concerning the claim that the standards of review were never properly tied into the respective issues. I think that we've made the point in our brief and we will stand on that. Secondly, Your Honors, with respectfully, this seems to be an appeal of systematic omission. What I mean by that is, first of all, the appellant placed her medical condition into issue with her answer to interrogatory number 27. That's to be found at common law record page 947. And the answer there was, I have, and I quote, I have neurological problems which inhibit my ability to work. The problems are due to a neck injury in February 2012, as well as a back injury in June of 2003. The date on which the condition will end is unknown. Now, moving forward, Your Honors, I can't imagine why there is no mention of the hearing that was held in front of Judge Douglas on June 15th, 2016. Your Honors, that is at volume two, beginning at C-1361. In that hearing, Judge Douglas was very explicit and warned appellant's counsel at least two or three times about failure to produce documents. One time, the court said, and I quote, and this is at page 1371, the court says, well, I mean, if you don't waive the privilege, I guess then when we get to try, it should have been trial, I'm going to say you don't get to put on the information. If you haven't released records about it and they can't get the records, then you can't put the issue on. Then counsel for the appellant said at 1372, well, yeah, they might be relevant, but then raise the issue of the question of privilege. And obviously the court knew that, you know, you can't raise privilege and at the same time you raise your medical condition and not turn over the records. So
I think what it is if you raise privilege, then you can't present evidence.
Correct.
At all.
Okay.
Correct. And but the beginning of this, the importance of this June 15th hearing is critical, but it's never mentioned anywhere in the appellant's brief or the appellant's reply brief. So, I mean, these concepts just didn't arise beginning on September 6th of 2016. They didn't arise in January of 2017 when the evidence was stricken. They didn't arise at the post-trial motion in May, later on in May. So these are rules they have complied with. They weren't complied with. And in fact, the court told the counsel at C-1392 to tender affidavits of completeness and warned that you will run on your own peril on that, because if you haven't given them, if something you haven't given them comes up at trial, I may bar testimony or do other things. So you run on your own peril on that. But it was never updated.
I don't recall anything about invited error. Did you argue invited error at all?
No, essentially, Your Honor, what I did is I just argued forfeiture, because I didn't see any basis here as far as the trial judge's decisions, given the beginnings of these warnings on June 15th. I saw absolutely no abuse of discretion and no error in the trial court's ultimate decisions.
Mr. Johnson, what about the situation where Dr. Keegan says, well, I was now available on the December 21st date for purposes of the deposition, but it was too late. What obligation does she have or does counsel have to get a new date to follow that court order?
Because, and I believe that I believe Judge Douglas mentioned this in the court's discussion, because the order originally required Dr. Keegan to sit for the deposition, Dr. Keegan did not sit for the deposition. Judge Douglas refused to shift the burden to reschedule that to my client and said quite clearly that the burden to reschedule that deposition remained with Dr. Keegan and her counsel. In fact, and I quote it at record page 698, where the court said, Dr. Keegan's failure to appear for her deposition on the 21st of December, 2015 was not willful. The argument by Dr. Keegan and her counsel that it was incumbent upon the respondent to then follow up and continually ask for additional dates is somewhat suspect. They said, once deposition has been set and ordered by the court, if a party for whatever reason has to cancel, it is incumbent upon them to seek a time when the deposition should be rescheduled when they are canceling. To say, well, maybe if they don't ask, we will get away with not having to give the deposition at all flies in the face of the discovery rules. The court had ordered this deposition. It was incumbent upon Dr. Keegan to find a time when the deposition could be done. And if it was not done at the time when the court ordered. So, and I think the trial judge here made the correct ruling.
Was Judge Douglas's analysis sort of a new law, or did he have case law to support it?
No, he had case law to support it, the Dybul decision from this court, which in fact his rendition of the Dybul decision, which is at 404 Illap 3rd 479 2010 decision. He was presented with that case, and it was interesting that in this appeal, counsel or the appellant has cited the, I think it was the Szymanski case. But what happened in Dybul was the trial court, or Judge Douglas, Szymanowski, to General Motors case. Judge Douglas, when he reviewed Dybul, he was aware that these six factors listed by the court in Szymanowski were quoted verbatim and followed by this court in Dybul. So, oh yes, the court had the authority of Dybul. He was well aware of these factors that were promulgated by Szymanowski, and he followed them. And he found that, quote, therefore, surprise is something that the court has considered and finds to be substantial. Prejudicial effect of the preferred testimony is substantial as well, and that's at record page 699. So yes, the court had warned of the situation back on June 15th, had this authority in front of him. He made the correct ruling. There's no abuse of discretion here under these types of circumstances. And as far as the argument that somehow that appellant's lawyer was, or the appellant was deprived of due process, we stand on the Stocker decision, which is Illinois decision, which is and the Commonwealth Edison decision, which says that when there's not even an objection, that there's no error here. And here there was no objection lodged. I'm just at a loss to understand how that there's any error to be determined. And lastly, as to the maintenance issue, I don't believe, respectfully, by any stretch of the imagination, that there's been any showing of an abuse of discretion by this by the trial court. I respectfully ask, under all the circumstances, particularly, I mean, this is a the record in this case is in excess of 12,000 pages. Now, the original argument concerning maintenance was about a page and three quarters long, had record citations that the trial court had stricken from the record. Respectfully, Your Honors, I have to conclude, and I ask the court also to conclude, first of all, that the decision of the trial court should be affirmed in all respects. And I ask the court, under these rather unique circumstances, to find that this appeal is frivolous, because my client should not have to pay to defend something like this under these circumstances. And on that note, Your Honor, I have nothing further, unless there are any questions of the court.
I have no questions.
I have none.
I haven't either. Thank you. Mr. McCullough, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay. They will involve a willful violation by the wife. We don't have that situation here. We have the judge found that it was not willful or refusal. And the other point is that the frivolousness that's asserted here is based on the failure to provide a record for the various parts of the trial. As I pointed out in my opening, there was no requirement for a record of what was said, because the questions presented were a question of law, and Christian Papin doesn't really have an argument against that. With that, I will rest. Please reverse the judgment in this case and remand it for a proceeding for the circuit court. Thank you.
No questions.
Nothing additional. Thank you.
Thank you. I have no further questions. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Clerk, Mr. Marshall, will you please close out the case?
Yes, Your Honor.